On Sunday, May 18th, clashes erupted between the Israeli occupation force and at least 80 Palestinian youth of the Balata refugee camp near Nablus. The IOF entered Balata in an armored personnel carrier, an APC, and a jeep. There has been a complete closure on the West Bank, a complete closure of movement for Palestinians over these last couple of days. And we're now joined by Andrew Lanker, who is currently in Nablus, and he's a volunteer and organizer with the International Solidarity Movement. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon.
Can you speak about the situation currently in Nablus and throughout the West Bank? There has been a complete closure on the territories.
Yes, that's true. The closure came into effect, as far as I've understood, yesterday, and has been upheld ever since. Today we were at the both yesterday and today we've been at the checkpoints to see how the situation is. And there are five checkpoints surrounding Nablus, and two of them are completely closed, and three of them are closed in a way that makes it very difficult for the Palestinians to move freely in the West Bank, meaning that it is possible if you have business in a nearby village and your ID card allows you to go there. But if you, for instance, want to go to another city like Ramallah or Jenin and you're coming from Nablus, it is not possible to move through the checkpoint.
Now, this complete closure of the West Bank has been billed as a response to a wave of suicide bombings that have occurred in Israel over these last couple of days. However, these checkpoints and these closures are a regular occurrence in the territories. You have been monitoring the checkpoints over the last couple of days, but can you speak about how this plays out generally, checkpoints and curfews, both in Nablus but throughout the West Bank?
The curfews are a stricter measure against the Palestinians. The closures are less strict. The curfews are imposed, I think, yesterday. It was Ramallah who had a curfew because one of the attacks the Palestinians performed, I think it was 3 days ago, the Palestinian, I think, came from Ramallah. So that will close down the city completely, and the tanks will enter the city. Now, that was a curfew. Now, the closures are imposed every time, as far as I have, that's my experience, every time there is a suicide attack or an attack on Israeli from the Palestinian side.
Can you speak about how these closures and curfews affect the kind of day-to-day operations of life in a city like Nablus?
Yes. A curfew means that you basically can't be on the street, so that halts the city completely. If you are caught in the street, you risk being shot or at least getting arrested. Now, the closures will prevent any movement of goods to and from the cities, and in general at the checkpoints. And that it doesn't have to be even a closure. Just at the checkpoints, the ordinary civilian Palestinian will very often be harassed. They will be told to wait for several hours. We have several instances where they have arrived at 7 o'clock in the morning and been held in the sun, forced to sit down on the ground or kneeling on the ground for at least 10 hours. Sometimes we're able to approach the soldiers and negotiate with the soldiers. That is one of the roles of ISM, to bring food and water for these, I wouldn't even call them that they've been arrested. They're just held there, detained. And it's not an order given from the top army or the top command. It seems often as if the soldiers themselves are kind of doing this as they see fit. That means also then that some people will be let through and others won't, but it doesn't seem as if there's any system in it as such.
The ISM has been operating in the territories for quite a while and has participated in a number of nonviolent direct actions against the Israeli occupation, defying these curfews you've been talking about, walking through checkpoints when checkpoints are closed. There's this type of response to the Israeli occupation, and then there's also the response of more militant groups like Hamas or Islamic Jihad of suicide bombings. What would be some of the motivations of the situation that somebody who did participate in a suicide bombing were coming from?
Often these suicide bombers come from poor neighborhoods, neighborhoods that has army presence almost every day, harassment, no job, no hope for the future. Well, they're depressed and they're traumatized, many of these youths. I was staying at the home of a family who lost one of their sons, a 16-year-old. He was attacking a Jewish settlement and was killed just 2 days ago. And I was talking to the brother. The family was completely crushed. They were in deep mourning. And the brother was telling me, a week ago, I was playing computer with him, and now my brother is dead. Why? He said. Why does the world close its eyes? Why does the world allow a little boy to lose hope and pick up a gun to kill and get killed? He was devastated. This older brother, who was 21, he had no idea what his younger brother was doing. So this is, even the families do not quite understand, well, they can probably understand why he would do it, but how can I explain it? They don't know about it anyway. Now, I talked to another Palestinian and I asked him the same question. He said, well, when you wake up in the morning and you feel dead, you walk in the streets and you feel dead. And in the evening when you go to bed, you feel dead. What is the difference between that and then attacking an Israeli and get killed? There's no difference to them. They might as well, if you would put it like that, they might as well do something actively to resist the occupation.
Can you talk about some of the actions that have been organized by the ISM and the kind of work that the ISM does on the ground? There's a coordinated effort between internationals like yourself and Palestinians to resist the occupation.
Yeah. First of all, I would like to stress that the ISM is a nonviolent organization. So we're not affiliated with any political groups or any terrorist organizations. What we try to do is to teach the young Palestinians through training and talking about it, meeting with the families, taking part in the community. We teach them about nonviolent resistance. And nonviolent resistance, direct action, would be to, for instance, remove a roadblock that has been placed there by the Israeli army. As an ISMer, you would sleep at the family's houses, the houses of the family who has lost a son or a daughter in a attack against the Israeli occupation. This is done because the Israeli government or the Israeli army has a policy of demolishing homes, blowing the homes up, of families where one family member has done such an attack. And by this international presence in the houses, we can hopefully prevent the demolition from occurring. That has been our experience anyway. And a few times we have not been able to prevent it, but we at least have been able to observe how the demolition took place, how the family was treated. Often when we are not there, the family will get maybe 5-10 minutes to collect their things and clear out of the house, and then it's blown up. Now, if we're there, we can negotiate with the soldiers and buy the family some time. I mean, we're not talking a day. We're talking maybe half an hour or an hour, but that is often enough to get the most valuable items out of the house before it's demolished.
Well, the entire West Bank is closed by the Israeli army. As an ISMer currently in Nablus, what do you expect to do within the coming days?
We have several things planned. We will monitor the checkpoints every single day, I expect so. And we have a roadblock, well, actually two roadblocks we will remove. These roadblocks are placed in Nablus and will force any vehicle I mean, you can walk over the roadblock, and it's not guided by any Israeli soldiers, but it will force any vehicle to make a very long detour, meaning that it's purely harassment. I mean, the roadblocks in such has no relevance. Just as when my experience is this, when the army enters a place like the Balata refugee camp where ISM is staying, they do this to provoke the youths to throw stones at the armored vehicles, tanks, and the Israeli army will then respond by shooting. Now, you talked earlier in the program about the clashes on Sunday, and well, first of all, like, clashes is a bad word because we're talking about tanks and other armored vehicles that enter the area, enticing or provoking the youth to start throwing stones, and then the Israeli forces respond by shooting back with rubber bullets and shock grenades and sometimes live rounds also. Now, on this last Sunday, actually, I shouldn't say rubber bullets because they are like a marble ball made in steel that size, and it's coated by Teflon, but it does pack a punch if you're hit by one, and it can actually kill you at a close range if you're hit in the head. But we had four youths injured, according to our sources, four youths injured from these bullets, Teflon bullets, and then we had one critically injured from a live bullet. Also, we had a 16-year-old youth detained by the soldiers, where he was severely beaten and hospitalized.
That's Andrew Lankar, who's with the International Solidarity Movement. The ISM is a Palestinian-led organization which organizes direct actions, nonviolent direct actions against the Israeli occupation in coordination between internationals and Palestinians. The ISM has been operating for just about 2 years now in the occupied territories to resist the Israeli occupation. You can get more information about the ISM at www.palsolidarity.org, that's palsolidarity.org, or here in Canada at www.ismcanada.org.